When I was young, for the longest time, my parents tried to keep me away from the internet. They always saw the negativity that came from it and ignored the potential it had. Of course, they couldn't keep this up forever. Eventually, it became more and more accessible, and they finally caved in, and we got a family computer. The computer itself wasn't anything spectacular, but what it held was truly the new man-made wonder that grew each day. When I got home from school, I could go online and read whatever articles I could find, peer into people's lives through personal written blogs, and play the assortment of games that people made. I couldn't explore everything, as my parents had put a parental filter on the computer, and I was young at the time, only 12 years old. But honestly, I had no interest in the sort of stuff they were trying to protect me from. A few years down the line, I started finding interesting stories. I could never tell if they were fiction or not, as they often never had an author credited. They'd also be shared around so much that you never find any original source. This gave these tales more mystery. A lot of them were laughable, unrealistic serial killers, impractical monsters. However, one story caught my attention and stuck with me ever since reading it. It was called The Russian Sleep Experiment. It was about Russian researchers performing an experiment on some captured prisoners of war. They falsely promised their freedom if they sat in a chamber with gas that would suppress their want and need for sleep. Eventually, they mentally deteriorated, and the scientists found them as a husk of their human selves. They were mutilated, guts hanging out of their bodies. They were very still alive. Not only this, but they had shown extraordinary strength. They only wanted one thing: to be put back in the gas. It ends with one of the generals ordering some scientists to put them back in the test chamber, and for the scientists to go in and manually observe these monstrosities. This triggers a reaction from one of the scientists, who grabs the general's gun, shoots him, aims it towards the last surviving patient, and the creature explains that he was what lies dormant in each of us, a hidden demon we suppress with our natural need for sleep. Now, that was a condensed version of the story anyway. I'm definitely recommending checking it out. When I read this story, I was in shock. Was it real? Who wrote this? Is it possible? These questions and more flooded my mind and stuck with me for a few years of my life. I mean, I've seen a lot of leaked experiment documents from two world wars, bats with bombs, dogs with two heads. This wasn't the most absurd scientific idea I'd seen pitched from those times. Over time, things were pushed back, although my love for psychology and interesting behavioral experiments still held my interest. I focused on the old controversial ones, like the Zimbardo Stafford Prison Experiment, where Zimbardo organized some students to incarcerate other students and hold them prisoner. Eventually, things led to an authoritarian control, and it resulted in the mock police to use actual brutality and psychological torture to maintain control. Another one I just love is the Milgram Experiment. Some paid volunteers, labeled as the teacher, were given control of the electric shock device. They had to ask an assortment of questions to the learner, but they were also warned of the learner's heart condition. If wrong, the teacher administered an electric shock and moved on to the next question. Each time the voltage was increased by 15. After a number of shocks, the learner would eventually be in so much pain that they would start banging on the wall. He would complain about his heart condition, but the scientist would simply prompt the teacher to continue. Eventually, after being told they wouldn't be held responsible, the teacher would administer the killing blow and go well above what the subject could handle. What I love about this one is that you think it's the learner who's getting tested, but they're actually an actor. No one really died in that experiment. The experiment was set up to test people's obedience, and this test shattered expectations. Most psychologists propose that most people would stop before going above the lethal 450 volts. But even though they were all uncomfortable, showing signs of stress, even offering not to be paid and leave the experiment, 65% of participants went over the limit. This was an amazing display of raw human nature. There were even some controversial parallels drawn between the atrocities caused in the Holocaust and how humans fall into the demands of authority. These cases and more displayed and concluded a lot of dark motives behind our polite human exteriors. However, these cases and more are also the reason why psychology ethical standards were set up. Nowadays, you can't do anything remotely as intensive as the experiments back in the good old days, Principles and guidelines are so restricting that you can barely test anything ambitious about the human mind and will. I hate it. I pitched my ideas and hypotheses for many tests that I felt could further our understanding of ourselves at our most rawest level, but legalities and ethics were a barrier I couldn't overcome. I wanted to be the guy who set up these labyrinths of will, see if we were still capable of functioning as our primitive selves once were. I worked hard on my degree, which I saw as my ticket to this level of power, but all I held was a glorified piece of paper that let me listen to people's feelings. There was no way I could get funding from an official government body, so I'd have to do the next best thing. Fund it myself. However, I was sitting on a mountain of student debt. I was already one step behind. It was a good thing I was qualified to get paid a ridiculous amount by listening to people's feelings. It wasn't easy at first, starting off as a junior, then working my way up to a private counselor, but I did it, and now I was making bank with minimal input. After a while, I'd saved enough for a good first-off experiment. Something that had influenced me and piqued my curiosity into this world of experiments. The Russian sleep experiment. The idea was simple. Just stop someone sleeping for a long period of time. Body has many deterrents for sleep. Caffeine, fear, adrenaline, pain. I took to the drawing board and planned out a schedule. The next task was the room. Luckily, I lived in a detached house, and the spacing between my house and my neighbor's was relatively far away. First, I saved up for a basement extension on the house. After that was complete, I soundproofed the walls with the best padding I could find. Best part about doing this now is that I could amend the issue the researchers had in the original experiment. They had to monitor the subjects through a small porthole window, whereas I could keep track of everything in crisp HD at a relatively low price. The icing on the cake was the reinforced door to keep the subject from escaping. Once everything was set, I needed a test subject. Of course, no one would willingly volunteer for this. I couldn't go down any official route, so I had to improvise. Luckily, while working, I found the perfect person. For a number of weeks, I'd been counseling a guy named Josh Kent. He'd complain about voices in his head, strange urges that he was scared of. However, from what I could tell, he never had anything wrong with him. He simply needed someone to talk to. And having these problems meant he had a reason to see someone. Me. He had recently lived through his mother and his wife's passing in the same month, and he had no kids or family to talk to. Due to the tragedy, he left his job, so he would come to me with various issues that he thought he had. Honestly, though, it would just turn into idle chat, because in reality, he just wanted someone to talk to. Nice guy, really. He would pay for this expensive chinwag with the hefty inheritance money that he'd received. With no close ties, he was the perfect person to use. He was disposable to society, so in a sense, I was almost doing the world a favor. I didn't have to wait long before he scheduled another appointment. No doubt to talk about how lonely he was and how life had changed for him. We engaged in our usual manner, and while he was relaxed, I slipped behind him and squeezed the content of a syringe I concealed behind my wrist into his neck. He dropped like a sack of potatoes, and I easily managed to sneak him into my house unnoticed. He was peaceful when I dressed him in the clean white garb. This was probably going to be the last sleep he was ever going to have, I thought to myself. I chained his arms and legs to stop him from escaping. Since the gas used in the original experiment was never named, I had to use what I knew would work, the syringes. An occasional dose of adrenaline and constant consumption of caffeine in his water and food meant that I could do a good job at keeping him awake, and for the times he would really force himself to sleep, his restraints were wired to shock him with a hefty jolt by remote. After setting up, I waited for him to wake. Eventually, he came to, and I pressed a button linked to an intercom.
Welcome, Josh. I'm sure that you're confused, but don't worry. You're here for a reason. You always spoke of the voices and urges that you were scared of. Well, I'm about to perform a great experiment to fix them. Don't be frightened. Everything is happening for a reason. Trust me.
All while I was saying this, I saw his face contort into a fear and then regret. A million thoughts must have been running through his head, thoughts that I would never know. After he had eased up some more, I explained what was going to happen. I talked about how I was going to treat his condition through a new experiment by resetting the brain. I told him to achieve this, I had to prevent him from sleeping for 30 days. Reaching day 30 was never my main goal. My first goal was to beat the days passed in the original experiment, 12 days. I never told him my true intentions as well. I would have been stupid to do so. It would have only caused him panic. This way, he'd be more cooperative. A day passed while I was observing him on the monitors, and he was a bit weary. However, he was stable and awake through the small and regular doses of caffeine. I would occasionally see him try and sleep, but be unable to. The times he would be almost able to, I would remind him to stay awake through the intercom. And when he would be less cooperative, I would send a small, harmless jolt to the restraints. Afterward, he'd scream obscenities at me, but I'd remind him it's for his own good, and he'd be less hysterical. Me, however, I was feeling the effects bad. Something so simple, so flawed, in the experiment overlooked. I had to constantly monitor him, yet I also needed sleep. Halfway through the second day, I risked it. I lay my head on my desk and set an alarm for 6 hours. That'd be ample amounts of sleep. When I woke, my eyes were still heavy, but I was rested enough to make another shift of watching Josh. However, when I looked at the screen, I saw he was motionless. My eyes widened when I realized why. He was sleeping. I came to the room and shook him violently, releasing my frustrations, both of Josh and of myself. "Come on, Josh, you have to stay awake for this to work," I yelled.
"It's too hard. Can we try something else?" Josh replied wearily.
I jabbed his arm while he was saying this with a small shot of adrenaline, then gave a speech about how this is for the best and how this will help him for the rest of his life. He took what I said in stride, but I could tell he was losing faith. I wasn't going to let his weak will affect the magnitude of what I was going to accomplish. To investigate what lies deep within our subconscious is something too valuable to squander because one is not willing to cooperate. As I walked away, I thought about how this experiment could fail because of the simple flaw in the plan, that I had to be awake to monitor him. I cursed myself as I sat down, lamenting on the lack of professionalism that comes with this kind of underground research. I had no extra staff, no special monitoring equipment, no scientists to help with chemicals, but I was adamant to do this. Besides, I was too far in. There was no way I could go back now, and it would be a monumental task to set this up again. It had to be now. My new goal was to simply observe Josh for the longest period of time I could to see signs that could prove my hypothesis. I sat down in front of the computer screen, reset the clock, and monitored Josh for the rest of that day. 24 hours later, and my eyes were heavy. I stared at the glowing image of Josh, who was probably feeling the same way. I saw him starting to nod, so I sipped some coffee and instructed him to stay awake through the intercom. Minutes passed, and I knew he was starting to ignore me over his desire to sleep. I got up and slowly headed to the cell to see him dipping his head to a comfortable position. I raised my arms to push the needle straight into his neck and force the adrenaline into his body. His eyes shot open from the shock, and soon he was jittering from the reaction to the chemical. I exhaled in approval and slowly headed back to my seat. However, I wasn't faring well myself. I looked over at my supplies for adrenaline and wondered how long it'd be until I had to use that on myself. I poured myself some coffee and carried on watching. 46 hours had passed. I leaned back in my chair and took in the fact that we were almost at the 2-day mark, something that had probably been done by many students trying to crunch for their finals or workers trying to meet deadlines. However, I felt that we were getting closer to the end. 57 hours in, and it felt like an uphill battle against being dragged into the depths of the land of Nod. Josh, obviously much less motivated than me to stay awake, was worse off. Since the 2-day mark, I had already given him 2 half-doses of adrenaline, and even had to use some on myself. Caffeine was starting to become close to ineffective with how deprived we both were from sleep. I also started hallucinating small things at first. Small shapes moving off the side of my vision, sounds that shouldn't have been there. My head was dropping to the weight I felt in my head. Jolted awake. While battling the urge to sleep, my ears rang with a burning screech coming from the cell. I looked at the screen to see Josh wailing his lungs out and tugging against his restraints. "I don't want to be here anymore," he yelled. "Get me out of here!" His will was hanging by a thread. Wouldn't be long before he'd start to revolt against my needs. I couldn't let that happen, though. There was too much at stake. Many grueling hours later, and we were both sat at a stalemate. Timer was indicating that 62 hours had passed. The effects of fatigue were chipping away at us both. Josh had particularly lost a lot of energy from his constant crying and babbling, sprinkling between his begging to be set free. His wrists were raw from the tugging and struggling that came from the protests of being held against his will. My state wasn't much better. I was fatigued beyond belief, however. One thing kept me going. While observing Josh, I was occasionally glancing over to my copy of the Russian sleep experiment. And the more Josh mentally deteriorated, the more it started to align with what was documented before me. I wondered why it wasn't affecting me, but maybe I had a particularly strong aversion to the effects, as I was fully aware of them, and had the willpower to muscle through the whole ordeal. So with this in mind, the more extreme things became, the more I realized that I had to keep going. Hour 91. Time was moving slow and my heart was racing. To keep up with making Josh not sleep, I had to start matching adrenaline doses with Josh, which I had to up the frequency of. This mixed in with the caffeine pills and other stimulants, my chest was feeling tight. My mind was floating on clouds. Luckily, I only had one focus, and that was keeping Josh awake. Along with these many drugs, I had to resort to the shocking device that was wired to Josh's restraints more often. I don't know if it was because it was starting to become necessary or because my ability to carry myself to his cell on a regular basis was almost non-existent, but it was working. As for Josh himself, he would dip in and out of sporadic behaviors, usually happening when he was either shocked or I came in with some chemicals. This is throwing me through some loops as he's tossing around and yelling was close to what was described in the original experiment, but it was mostly spurred on by my presence. The only way to verify this was to carry on. So I did. The timer rolled over to 144 hours. I scribbled something haphazardly down about how 6 days had passed, but it wasn't very comprehensive. Josh was awake, but in a near-unconscious state. His head had dipped, mouth dribbling, and occasionally babbling nonsense. He would respond to messages, but I couldn't understand any of them. Both our arms and necks shared the same resemblance of red dots. I don't know how fatal the amount of adrenaline we took was, but I was sure the human body could take a lot. I mean, it is naturally found in the body. Josh's head dipped and eyes drooped shut, and I slowly stood up and shuffled over to the remains of the adrenaline supply, weight of doubt dragging in my heels. More time passed. I stare at the clock, the seconds roll over to zeros again. Minutes roll over to make more zeros, and the hours show the next benchmark. 192. 8 days. I look over at Josh. His face is dry through the loss of tears and saliva. The fight in his eyes are gone. The only thing stopping me from pronouncing him dead was the small movement from his chest that implied breathing, almost like routine. His eyes started to drop. It's time for another shot. I drag my way to his form. I drop down to my knees and I look at him. Nothing about him screams anything animalistic. Did something go wrong? Maybe it was the chemical they used in the original experiment. Maybe he slipped in sleep when I was in a lapse of concentration. The doubt of the validity of this tale was weighing heavy on my mind, but I could neither confirm nor deny it still due to the increasing amount of errors in my personal study. I jab the needle where my arm lands and push the liquid into his bloodstream. A few seconds and it was reacting. He started twitching for a few seconds, and after that, his head dipped and stopped moving. I look closely and see he lost the small chest motion that implied breath. It wasn't hard to piece together that he was now dead. I possessed the resources to resuscitate him, but I had neither the energy nor the motivation to do so. As I lie down with the events of the past 8 days running through my mind, only one thing prevailed in my mind as my eyes closed with a lot of relief. I really hope I wake up. Hey there, kids, it's me, Mr. Creepypasta, and I just wanted to tell you thank you for watching tonight's video. Because this is October, I'm going to make this nice, short, and sweet. If you'd like to help support the show or the podcast, head over to patreon.com/MrCreepyPasta. If you'd like to get yourself some new Halloween and creepypasta-inspired tees, you can head over to etsy.com/shop/ivorymonocletee. And if you want to catch me, Creeps McPasta, and Mew during our live Halloween tour around the southern U.S., head over to creepypasta.shofetti.com. That's creepypasta.shofetti.com. Hang on to your hats, kids, because this year is a 31-day Halloween countdown. Happy Halloween and sweet dreams.